Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
You're tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Welcome to the Dolcezza Server Experience. We are live from the Line Hotel. This is Violeta Edelman, your host from Dolcezza Gelato, and I'm here with my partner,
Rob Duncan, also Dolcezza Gelato.
We make gelato in Washington, D.C., and we are here today with Andrew Dana and Daniela Moreira, the duo behind nationally acclaimed Timber Pizza and Call Your Mother Jewish Deli. Thank you so much, guys. Jewish.
Yeah,
yes.
There you go. Put that dash in there.
Yeah.
Dash of salt.
The all-encompassing.
Something like that.
Can be whatever you want to be if you add the ish, right?
Exactly.
It's just like, Jewish.
With the kings of ish, I always say.
Kingish.
So we met Andrew back in 2014 when he was driving his vintage Chevy truck with the wood-fire mobile oven around farmers markets here in D.C. Danny wasn't even in the picture, I think. And we have a lot of things in common in what is called our origin story. So when I was reading about you guys, I realized that Andrew had a tech job and Rob had a tech job. And you hated your job and Rob hated
Amen.
His job.
Fuck that.
Yeah. And you quit and started a pizza business and you had no clue how to make pizza.
Zero.
We had no freaking
clue
on how to make gelato.
A little more, not much.
That's where Danny comes in.
Yeah, and anyway, you know, we both started selling at farmers markets.
Yeah.
We did it 10 years before. We started in 2004.
Oh, jeez.
You guys did it in 2014, but very similar story. So tell us more about those days at the farmers markets trying to figure out what the hell you were doing.
Yeah, I always say it was like we were walking in a landmine and didn't know it, and we're just like lucky enough not to hit a landmine because we... Honestly, the first year had no effing clue what we were doing. You know, there was markets we showed up and we were like, yo, why is the dough not rising? And then we learned we hadn't put yeast in the dough. So it was like legit, like learning from scratch. But what we did well is we showed up every day and sort of ran through walls every day and had a lot of pride. So if the product wasn't right one day, we would get back in the kitchen and figure it out the next day. And just sort of kept chugging along. And it's sort of like you don't cut down a tree in one single swing. It like takes, you know, a lot of swings. And that's what it was. We were just out there every day grinding, sort of making our own luck. And then we were lucky enough to find Danny, which was super tight. Before that, you guys allowed us to do a pop-up in your factory space, which was a big, big moment for us. You guys were the only ones who were down with the 5-course pizza tasting menu. So thanks for letting us do
burnt
that.
Burnt pineapple. burnt pina colada that we did with you
burnt
guys.
Burnt pineapple pina colada gelato with crumble on top for dessert after 4 courses of pizza.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Good times. I don't know if people left feeling too good, but
all the pop-ups that we had in the factory went off really well.
Nice. Yeah, no, it was awesome. And it gave us like a confidence. It was like, hey, we can pull this off. Maybe we can pull off a restaurant. So... it was like that's like an example of like a little stroke that led to this bigger picture of opening a restaurant and going to the next level.
You know, when you started back in the day and doing that and doing it kind of self-taught, never done before, and so you kind of learn by a lot of mistakes and stuff like that. It's the same thing that when we started in 2004, we had never made one batch of gelato ever, and we opened up a gelateria kind of thing.
Well,
right?
My mom took a 1-week course on how to make gelato.
Always, yeah, no,
master,
but still.
Master.
And so we had this guy. What was his name? Guillermo or
no?
Gustavo. Something. He came up and lived with us for a month, and so he was the one that was helping us make the gelato every day to open it up.
Gustavo,
like
gelato master from Venezuela.
Yeah, I wonder where he's at right now. So and now just the way that things are in the last year or two, I'm curious to hear from you. Mm-hmm. I've said, and I found myself saying, in the last year or more, if we had a try to do what we did in 2004, now it would be so much harder to do that, because when we started back in the day, there was nobody.
Yeah,
there was very little competition. And so it was a much more forgiving environment that allowed you to do have that process of finding yourself, your way, your product and stuff like that. Where if we opened up today trying to do that without really having known, and man, we made so many mistakes, you know. I mean, I think that's the process of learning. It just, now the landscape has changed and it's a different where just because there's more competition now. And so there is a little bit more, I guess, higher expectations of the audience and the people that live in DC. And maybe you would kind of have to know what you're doing a little bit before you learned.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just competition. It's now this like culture of like, let's go to every restaurant on this list and let's review everything we're doing. And just like, there's so many
Instagram
eyeballs. Yeah, and
the it's pressures.
Like, yeah, where when we first started at the Columbia Heights Farmers Market, we'd sell 40, 50 pizzas. And most people were like, oh, this is cute. And I think we got like 2 Yelp reviews in 6 months because it just like wasn't as big of a thing.
Right.
And now everybody's a food critic.
There's like microscopes everywhere. Yeah. Every action, every word that's said, every pizza that's slung and everything, you get so much pushback or feedback.
Yeah, we were lucky. We created this sort of groundswell sort of like without being noticed.
Yeah.
And then finally we got to this point where we were like, we had found Danny. We knew what we were doing a little bit. And then it's when sort of all the eyeballs
then the attention
hit us.
Came and you were a little bit more
and then
ready.
We had this great story of coming from the farmers markets. So I agree. I think the timing for us was pretty perfect. And you've seen a lot of sort of copycat pizza businesses on the farmers market landscape pop up after us that like have not opened a restaurant and haven't sort of seen the following that we have. Part of that's timing, part of that's because maybe we're tight, who knows.
Maybe a little bit of both. Yeah, right. Maybe you're lucky.
So the evolution in the sense of, you know, you are just talking about opening your restaurant, right? And that's also similar to what we went through a little bit because I read that you bought like pre-made stuff for 2 seconds when you opened, and we served it the same thing. Mm-hmm. And then Rob was like, what the hell are we doing? It's like, we need to use fresh stuff and be seasonal and make the best products that we can. And I think that's where Danny comes in with making everything from scratch. So tell me about that process, Danny. How did that happen? Changing timber,
your
coming in and being like, "Hey guys,
with timber. Yes. Yeah.
This is
what
we're doing."
What the hell are you doing? What's that, so, Chef Boyardee sitting there on the
chill,
couch?
Chill. Let me first of all let me set the record straight.
Let me tell the story.
Because to start off, the pizza was sourced well. It was the caterer. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So I met them at the farmers market. I saw them at Georgetown Farmers Market
on Wednesday.
It was 2015.
Yeah.
And then that same week on a Friday, I saw him buying eggs. And, well, we had a disagreement for who was taking them because it was the last dozen and we share them. And that's when I came up to him and say, like, hey, I'm looking for a part-time job. If you need help, I'm here. And he say, sure, like, come on in. And then I saw them and I was like, they're doing pretty cool stuff. And I was out of culinary school. I wanted to learn.
Went to CIA, right?
Yes.
Cool.
And when I saw the oven, it just reminded me of home. And I wanted
home
to go
being
home.
Argentina. Yeah.
Growing up, my mom had a wood fire oven. So like it was just like love at first sight. And
with the fire or with
both.
Andrew?
Yeah. 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 Both. Go ahead.
The fire. Fire.
And this girl is on fire.
So anyways, I saw I was going to learn from them. So that's what I wanted. Like, okay, I'm going to steal their idea, go to Argentina and open my own business there.
Uh-huh.
Good plan. Like a good Argentine. Good. Copy that
so
shit.
So the truth is like they seem like they have their shit together. Like he made amazing pizza. They were buying everything from the farmer's market. All the ingredients that were on the pizza, they were seasonal and from the farmer next door. So I fell in love with that too. But then there was this catering part of the business where it needed a little more technique and knowledge, I guess. And I remember driving to an event like an hour from here in a farm. And
we had just wrapped up at a farmer's market. This is how we used to do it. We would go to a farmer's market and then we'd have a catering at nighttime, no break, like 20 hour day. So we wrapped up the farmer's market. We're like, Danny, get in the car and I'll let you take it.
So we were in the car and I don't know, we were probably like 45 minutes away. He's like, hey, why don't I start making the appetizers? And I look at him like, is this guy kidding me? But like, you know, I saw he was a joke. And then he was like, no, yeah. So like,
I cook here.
So
right now
I was sitting on the car front seat making caprese skewer. So Like, were
they paying you overtime, by the way?
He was paying me amazing.
Cash was under the table.
He's like,
exactly. Farmer market cash only.
Exactly. He was like, I'll pay you $12 in cash, all you can eat pizza and a free t-shirt. But it ended up being like $30.
Charming.
Like, he was just giving me cash, and I was like, is this guy
okay?
If
we had a good market, I'd break people off. It was busy. You know.
Yeah, we used to do the same thing.
Oh, I know. I love the old days, man. We had 9 or 10 farmers markets, man. Yeah. You're like swimming in the shit.
Yeah, so anyways, we got to the place, and he's like, okay, you can help us by making the salad. The greens were all from the farmers market, all cool, but then he hands to me a bottle of dressing. Out of the store, and I was like, okay, so I can help them with that, and like that's how I came in, like trying to like source everything, make everything from scratch. And
listen, people said that was the best Caesar salad they ever had. I sliced it up with some Cardini
on Yelp. Where was that?
At the catering. It was the best Caesar, and all it was salad dressing from the store, mad Parmesan, croutons. And Danny was like, Jesus, why'd I go to culinary school if these two idiots are making stuff out of a can that people are liking?
Yeah, true.
But we were doing that not because of, like, we didn't want to make dressing. We just, like, simply didn't know how. We had, like, figured out how to make dough. But the idea of making salad dressing was, like...
Yeah.
It's a whole process, yeah, man. When we opened in 2004, I remember, like, our peach gelato was the gelato mix that we made with the cream, milk, and sugar. And then we would open up a can of something from Italy of peach preserves and put that in there. And it was compared decent to what we make today, I was going to say it was shit. Decent shit, you know? I mean, it was not sure. The Toygo Orchards in-season Pennsylvania peaches that you roast in your oven. You blend and then fold, and that's what we do today. But again, it's that whole process.
We couldn't even go there like you. We were like scrambling to just open the shop and clean and deliver and make a living.
And I was like working full. When we opened, I was working full time doing a project of software install. Oh, Bialetta was studying her first semester ever in English at American University. My father-in-law, Oscar, was dying on our sofa.
He didn't die, thanks God.
Thanks God,
he's
man.
Fine, but
he had a tumor of cancer and all that. And so
there were two fine years.
Chemo. No, it's like that. Yeah. Going through that, you know, people say like the trials and tribulations and all that. You go through the fire and it either burns you away or it burns off a lot of the impurities, and what's left is a little bit stronger. And that's definitely how we started. Yeah. It's like you have to. There's that when you go out and do your own thing that you've never done before, it's good luck. Yeah.
I kept my job for the first 4 months, and I used to travel a lot for work, and I stopped traveling for work, and I was just going to farmers markets, but the job didn't know. And it was like something out of a movie where like I'd just be gone for a week and I'd go in Monday and they'd like call me into the office and I'd be like, fuck, I'm gonna get fired. And they'd be like, Andrew, we like love what you're doing. And I'd be like, what the fuck? Like,
what are you guys paying
attention? I was at a farmer's market for a week. And so I was like, well, I'll work here forever. Like, this is going to be sick. And then finally we had an article written about us in the Washington Post. And the head of HR like called me into our office. She was like, oh, this is cool. Like, what's going on here? And I was like, ah, shit. And
that's
like,
so funny.
That's how it all came crumbling down.
I told everybody what I was doing. I was like the independent consultant on the project.
But
of
they
all.
Couldn't fire you. You were
right. No,
consultant.
I told them that I was going to, like, you know, we're trying to start our own business and all that. So
they were
kind of
like,
no,
honey, let me help you. They were all like,
I remember dashing out of meetings and there'll be the guy on in the Georgetown, like the contractor, telling me that he just like broke the wall down. Right. What does he do? Yeah. And you know, it was crazy. Yeah. The beginning moment. It's a birth story.
The birth story is,
you know, rupture and bleeding and screaming and crying. You know, it's like emergence happens the same thing, whether it's a baby coming into the world or it's like a small business being formed. It's chaos.
Amen.
Complete chaos. And you just hope that you can.
That's everybody's like, I'll start a business once my business plan is perfect. I'm like, just fucking do something, because you will never look back at that again. You have to make new decisions every single
day. We never had a business plan.
We had Simone from Tali Moly last time here, and she was sitting there and she was saying, you know, people ask me if I should open my own business, and I say, no, don't do it. But if after that you still have the instinct to go for it, then God bless you.
So, everything from a distance or from the outside is much more romantic than what it is as far as like what it takes on the inside. It's it's so much work, so much risk, so much vulnerability. Your ass is on the line all the time. And you know, we're 15 years in this, and it's like there's all different levels. It's kind of has its life cycle. And but it's always, as long as you're a small business, it remains that vulnerability that you have.
Yeah, I say it's like a game of whack-a-mole, you know, the arcade game where you hit one and another one pops up. Like the second we're like, oh, this is running smoothly. It's like, bam,
the tire blows and you're on the side of the road. Pops up,
yeah. So,
Danny, I want to go back to you, and you're my Argentine fellow here. So I want to hear more about your story. You have a very interesting story. So your parents own a public campground, right, in Cordoba? In Argentina, in Cordoba. And you grew up there, living in tents. I want to hear about this. So, in the summers, right? Not that you were living in tents all the time, but it just sounds fascinating to me.
Yeah. So my mom was a teacher, mm-hmm. and my dad had like a car. He worked for car races job. So they were both working full time. But growing up, we used to love going camping. We'll go like for months to this river in Cordoba, and he was in love with that area. And then one day he asked the owner of that camp, he was like, will you send me a piece of property? Eventually I just want to have build a house and have a place to go every summer. The guy said no. So he went to the next door guy and said, like, will you send me a piece of property? And then he said, sure, yeah. But his plan was to build a house and live happily ever after. After buying the property, he ran out of money. So instead of building a house, we put the tent there and we'll go for the summer. And there was no bathroom, no kitchen, no nothing. So we lived the whole summer like that. And then people started asking my dad, like, hey, can I pay you to go to the river? Because it was the only entrance to the river. And he said, okay. And he saw a business out of that. And he pretty much opened the doors and then never looked back after that, and his dream of building a house, like, whatever. So every summer, we'll move the whole house to the camp, and we all have our own tent. I had to share with my sister, but that's okay. We had the bed inside the tent.
Okay, so it was kind of like, glamping situation.
Right, so it was a glamping. Yeah, I had all my toys. I had everything.
For you all, like, you were, as a little girl, you always did it that way? Like, every summer, would move and live by the river?
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and my grandparents will be there, too. They had their tent, too. And they were old, but, you know, they were sleeping in tents, and it was just awesome. It was like rain, shine, anything.
And your mama was cooking, right? Is that how you started cooking?
So first people asked to go to the river, and then people started camping out, and then when you go for a week or more, then you forget stuff, and then people started,
or you, like, get tired of eating pasta,
right, or eating pasta and rice. Yeah. So they started asking my mom, like, hey, do you sell any food? And she'll pull the plates that she made for us and sell them. She did that a lot of times. She was like, no. Like,
you have the entrepreneur spirit. In
yeah.
I mean, your dad saw the business. Your mama was giving them your food. It's just, I mean, like,
we'll get so mad because, like, she'll cook. And then, like, she started cooking more in case somebody asked for food. She'll cook, like, sell it. But then we'll be sitting down and she'll be like, nope, never mind. Give me the plate. And we're like, what? So that happened a lot. And then she, like, opened a little store and started doing this as a business. And then they opened a restaurant. And it was open for 2 summers. And then my dad said, like, this is too much. Because it was a full restaurant. Like,
at
server
the campground?
At the
camp.
So it lasted for 2 months. And then they kept it as, like, to-go food. So no service. So I grew up with that in tents and then cooking since I was, like, 7 years old. And helping the whole family run the business. We had no employees, so it was just my dad and us. I was a server, I was a painter, I was cutting grass.
Were you cooking
anything.
Too?
I was cooking too, yes.
Your sister's older or younger?
Older.
Older.
Yeah.
And then how did you end up here in the States? What's the story?
So I graduated from high school and I didn't want to go to college. And my dad was like, you are going to college. So I found this culinary program that it was 2 times a week. I said, like, okay, I go 2 times and then the rest of the day I can get a job, make enough money, and then get the hell out of here. So I did that.
And this was in Cordoba as well?
That was in Cordoba.
Okay.
So I did that for a year. I went to Italy. I was 17, so I couldn't get a job.
You went to Italy, like, by yourself or with the school?
I went by myself, and I had my mom's cousin live there.
Where in Italy?
In Bormio. It's at the north of the limit with Switzerland.
Huh.
So I was like, I'm going to go try to get a job. But of course, you can't just like that. So I ran out of money, came back, became very passionate about cooking. And then all the jobs that I wanted, they required English as a second language. And I didn't speak English. And I didn't have any money. So I found the au pair program. And the family that hired me lived here in D.C.
Huh.
So I came here and
what
the family,
year did you come
that
here?
Was 2010.
Okay.
The family was amazing. We're still friends. The kids were awesome. And I stayed with them for 2 years. And then I got a scholarship to go to the CIA. And then
you went to 11 Madison Park, right?
And I went to 11 Madison Park.
Dang, from the fucking campground in Cordova to...
Campground Cordova. That's 11 Madison Park.
That is a big swing.
After 11 Madison Park, I kind of got lost and I went back to the campground. I did that for a year.
When you say you got lost, what do you mean by that? As far as like what you want to do in New York?
Yeah, there was a lot of expectations since I got a scholarship from family, from like founders and stuff. And everybody wanted me to see me like doing fine dining and 11 Madison Park type of things. And I saw that's what I wanted to do, but I was not happy. I hated New York. Like I could not stand New York.
Country girl.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm out of here. And then I came back to DC because I was like, okay, what's next for me? And I say I was the happiest ever in DC. I have this host family that is my family now. I'll start again from there. And that's what I was lucky to meet Andrew, and like he brought me back to like, you know, my passion and cooking with fire.
Weren't you gonna cook with Kwame? Was that
yes.
what you were gonna do? And then that got delayed?
Well, yeah, I was still
and then
in the mind
Andrew
I got
pop up with right. the Chevy vintage truck and the caprese.
You should do that.
Season dressing
caprese, you know, like in timber.
Yeah, I was going to work for him. And then, yeah, like it was waiting to open the restaurant. And I asked him if he needed part time. And then he started like pitching me like, hey, we're opening this restaurant. You want to be the chef?
That's so funny, you know, because now you're talking about all this background information. And I remember when Andrew reached out about opening Timber and said that there's a new chef that you're working with, and you guys came by the factory, and that's when we just talked about doing gelato on the menu at Timber and all that. And I had no idea. Now you're talking about all of that. It fills in all the blanks as far as like what the background was from when you had just met Andrew and came over to the factory to open
like
up Timber.
We met.
What's scary is we weren't even looking for a chef. Like in hindsight, like. I was going to be the chef, quote unquote. And it's like, we didn't even know what we needed. And then she popped up and was like, holy shit. Like,
you know, what's so weird.
It changed everything.
It's like it's so many times looking back. I mean, really that element, I don't like the word luck and I don't like the word blessed. You know, I just don't think those are the proper words to use. But when you look back so many times, it's like it's something that happens that helps you. Where you don't consciously know that. You don't consciously say, I need a chef and I need a really good chef.
Or you, Danny, you were going to cook for Shobishu.
She said no to me for 4 months.
Right.
Every day I'd be like, stay.
Gambling on a guy that was opening a pizza place. And then it ends up being like one of the top pizzerias in the country, you know, Bon Appetit and this
Young
and that.
Guns.
And
yeah, you guys, like, you know, the Midas touch where it's like you never, and that's something that's also hard to, not hard, but almost impossible to generate as far as you can't consciously really generate that being selected by Bon Appetit or the Young Gun. You know, I mean,
we didn't even know the list for Bon Appetit was coming out. Like, that's how clueless we were. We were just head down grinding.
Yeah.
And the list came out and my phone exploded. And I was like, what the fuck even is this list?
That level of clueless, that insular
50 best restaurants in the country, guys. That's what we're talking about. Bon Appetit. And that
10.
Was Timber. Yeah. Which year was that?
That was 2017.
17.
Okay.
Yeah, that was...
That was huge.
Holy so you know what? Go to that. That did that have a big impact on your business?
Yeah, that was like, so we opened June 2016. That list comes out the beginning of August 2017. I'm like on vacation in Lake Georgia with my family. This list comes out and just like, I didn't know about Bon Appetit list. And just like overnight, the reaction on the phone and on social media, I was like, I should probably hustle back to DC. So we like hustled back. And overnight, just like on a business level, sales went up 40%, now sustained for 2 years. So like forever changed our trajectory, like as a business and what we could do next. And not to say that maybe we wouldn't have done Call Your Mother if that didn't happen, but that did just like totally change the landscape for us. One, it sort of gave us validation. Two, it gave us sort of working capital to do other stuff. So like, I would say like the two huge moments in Timber Call Your Mother history are like A, bumping into Danny at these farmers markets, and then B, the Bon Appetit list, which sort of like overnight.
So funny,
first
man,
Danny,
like,
oh, then the press.
Oh, for sure.
Of course, man.
Hey, I want to talk about Call Your Mother, but we need to take a short break.
Yes.
Before we
you
talk
remind
to
people who you're listening to.
Yeah. Why don't you do it, my love?
You're
who are we talking to?
Dolcetta Sherbert Experience. We're talking with Andrew and Danny of Timber Pizza Call Your Mother, the Jewish deli, and woo-woo. We'll be right back after this.
Perfect. Guys, we're back at the Dolcetta Sherbert Experience on Full Service Radio. We were having fun and talking to Andrew Dana and Daniela Moreira, the duo behind National Acclaimed Timber Pizza and Call Your Mother Jewish. Jewish. I can't say that.
A Jew.
Deli.
I can't say either.
I'm
don't
sorry,
worry.
Guys. Yeah, there's so many things I can't say, but I'm okay.
I feel you.
I guess I just keep saying the way I say it.
Those immigrants. It's beautiful. Those immigrants, I'll tell you, man.
I know.
Ruin it all.
What can we do? So we were just saying that Timber had this amazing recognition as one of the best restaurants in the country by Bon Appetit, and I'm sure things are going well with Timber, and mm-hmm. everyone is asking you what's next, and you're thinking about what's next. Mm-hmm. And then Andrew pulls out the Jewish car and convinces an Argentine chef
gotta
who
do a bagel.
Didn't grow up with bagels to go into the bagel business. So he's a persuasive guy, I would say. So tell me more about this.
The spell.
Yeah, bagel the spell. Idea.
The soup, I'll give you the semi-long, slightly abbreviated version. My dad is a lawyer, grew up in D.C., always said to me, like, oh, I should have opened a deli. And so I sort of stole that tagline, made it a pizza place. So after that, and was thinking about next, sort of I had this idea of deli, bagel in my head. And I'd always been interested in bagels. If you remember our pop-up at the Dolcetta factory, the first course was a pizza bagel that we made these little mini pizza bagels. We made the bagels from scratch. And then I just, through a friend of a friend of a friend, met this guy, Jeff Zients, sort of brilliant businessman. Everything he's touched has turned to gold. He was Obama's director of economics. So I go out to lunch with him, and I don't know who he is. I'm like doing a friend a favor. He's like, some guy's like, hey, my friend wants to open like a modern take on a Jewish deli. Will you have lunch with him? So I have lunch with this guy, and he tells me the idea. And it's sort of like a DGS-ish thing. And I love Nick, but DGS had just closed. And he tells me this idea, and I was like, honestly, I think that idea is just like kind of whack. Like, I think you need to do something else. Got to be blah, blah, blah. And then I go home and I Google him, and I'm like, fuck, like maybe I shouldn't have been so crazy around this guy. But then I think he sort of appreciated that honesty, and he reaches out and he's like, hey, like, why don't you flush out the idea and we'll see if we have something.
Who was the guy? I'm sorry.
His name is Jeff Zients. Yeah. So he's
the
just
economic
like
guy
a DC
Obama.
Business guy.
Okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. Like, okay.
And so Danny and I sit down, and like I've just always wanted to do a bagel sandwich shop, but like not do it. Like I'm half Jewish, and I don't.
Me too.
I've never really.
Yep.
Love that.
Half Jewish and half what?
And I love bagels, although amazing. I didn't grow up with bagels, but it's my Jewish DNA.
Yeah, and like Argentina, man, they're a lot of Jews down in Argentina. I guess yeah. more.
That's why I feel such a connection to you.
It's got like rabbis, like a line of like 17 rabbis in her family. It's crazy.
Super Jew.
But like I've never craved like a Reuben. I've never craved corned beef. So I knew if we were going to do it, we had to do it sort of our own way with a little twist. And that's why before we had anything, I said it's going to be a Jew-ish deli. And then we started to flush the idea out, and I brought it to Danny. And sort of our relationship is I bring her ideas. She says, are you fucking crazy? And then she does it anyway.
Sounds familiar.
She makes it good.
Yeah. And
sounds very familiar. Yeah. The idea to the reality, right. You know?
And I think why our bagels are so good is Danny came at it from like such a blank canvas. She didn't grow up with bagels. She doesn't have this sort of history. So it really was this blank canvas. And, you know, together we went to New York and went to South Florida because that's where all the old Jews retire. So we had to see what was going on down there. She went out to San Francisco to sample, and we just sort of started plugging along, testing. I mean, we had this vision of a bagel that had a baby between Montreal style and New York style, and we just started plugging away, and Jeff is our business partner and investor, and it took us 9 months to get the recipe locked in. We tried bagels every weekend. It wasn't that healthy. Or days it wasn't that fun. Like, people are always like, oh, your life's so sick. Like, you eat bagels every day. I'm like, you don't get it. Like, it kind of sucks at a certain point. Like, yeah.
We tell everyone that, you know, they get fat around us. That's right. What happens.
Yeah, when you do pastries, gelato. Yeah.
No, it's brutal. Yeah. That's my side of the story. And so far, so good.
You know, I love because it's like the whole time that you guys have been talking, it's all about this level of like innocence or the lack of experience or the lack of training.
Yeah.
And so what that does is it gives you that approach that doesn't come from a prescribed method of doing it. It comes from your own take at something. And that's something that obviously was.
Yeah, I think about. What we're good at is like putting blinders on. Because there's so much pressure to do stuff a certain way. If you're making pizza, like, oh, you have to use the 00 flour, and you have to use this
and
type
bagels.
Of oven.
And bagels, people have a lot of
and
opinions.
And bagels, like, oh, you
bagels.
Have to do it a certain way.
Yeah.
And then so everybody's doing it the same way.
Yeah.
And everything ends up sort of tasting the same, and everybody's doing the same stuff. And you have these experts come in, and they're like, oh, it has to be blah, 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 blah. And we're like, all right, but then it's just the same as that place. So what we do is we just put blinders on, and we, like, make shit we like, and hopefully other people like it, and so far, so good. Let's knock on some wood.
Knock on wood. But also, it's like it's reassuring to do now too with Timber and now Call Your Mother. Yep. Two things where you have demand for it and you get recognition for it. You get the awards and all that.
Yeah.
And so that gives you confidence to continue doing it that way. So it's very helpful.
Yeah, and it's like I'm from Mount Pleasant, so I grew up right here. And what DC has always done well is it's done high end dining, fancy dining, big splashy openings. But because it's such a transient city, it doesn't have like the neighborhood staples that like other neighborhoods have because there's just not the generations doing it.
Yeah.
And so above all, I think we've both wanted to just like create neighborhood joints that the neighborhood comes to and is sort of there for generations. And all this other stuff is incredible, but it's like sort of the icing on the cake. So.
Yeah.
And you open in a location that, you know, it was surprising to me when I saw that you guys were building there on George Avenue. And we live in Petworth.
Because we drive down that way to drop our kids at school every single day.
So I was like, whoa, they're opening here. That's brave.
That was called the mothership before, right?
I mean, the two, I haven't used a realtor for either place, mostly because the realtors are like, you're fucking crazy. Like, you shouldn't open something there. So I'm like, all right, I'll do it myself. And I like negotiate the leases. And I think above all, it comes from a place of like, we're so new to this and that innocence you're talking about. And we're like, we're not paying $20,000 a month of rent. Are you out of your mind? And so the only place you can find sort of lower rents is in these sort of
the owners
off the beaten track places.
They don't want to also deal with the realtors. That was our Georgetown thing, you know, how we dealt with them.
And like everybody wants to play. It goes back to that. There's all this pressure to do something a certain way, right? You have a proof of concept in Timber and it's like, oh, your next thing has to be in this high traffic area, high rent. You have to play the whole high volume game. And the question we're asking now is like, why? Why can't we create places off the beaten track, lower rents, lower revenues, but at the end of the day, maybe more profitable than the place that's playing that high volume, high rent game.
You know, it's like that with you guys being, I guess, at the beginning of that, like you have one place, separate from Timber, but Call Your Mother, and it sounds like that's one that you might want to open another one or multiple.
Sure.
And so at the very beginning, what you say is easier to stay out of that prescribed way. But as one grows and gets more locations and exposed, you know, it's like the pressures get greater. So that's the, you know, in the process of becoming successful, opening multiple spaces and having more people come in and say, you know, this is the way that it should be done. It's like it's so demanding.
For sure.
But very worthwhile to keep it, you know, to keep it the way that you really feel is the best way, which again, in the very beginning is easy.
For sure.
But then, because you don't have anybody telling you anything because it's only you. But then as you grow and maybe get more investors or more people that have say into what your business is, it's so important to stay true to who you are. At the same time, being receptive to what the folks are saying around you. It's a hard balance to walk.
I'll say what,
you know?
What I like that you guys do, and I'm not saying this because we're on your pod or whatever, but I always sort of have like looked up to you guys the way you guys have grown your business, is each location has like its own unique feel. And I think as places grow, there's sort of all this pressure that it has to be cookie cutter and the same. So kudos to you guys for each of your locations having it. Like
same thing from Georgetown, Bethesda to DuPont. That was us going in and I mean, the DuPont store was when we found it, and my father-in-law Oscar going in and saying, "Cool, we're gonna just paint the drywall white, and we're gonna open up our store because that's the cheapest way." And me saying, "You're fucking crazy!" And I take the whole kitchen crew for 2 weeks and busted out the drywall to expose the brick of the old building. So it was like it was us doing it up to then. Then, for the fourth store and beyond, we actually got our architect's studio that comes in and says, "This is what we think you should do."
Yeah.
And so then begin the process of going, "You got to be kidding me. That's what you want to do. That's terrible. That's ugly." Not with saying that those words,
right.
But then being forced because of the situation to then go into the design of your own space, because that's the space that you're going to inhabit. And it's a drag to inhabit the space of somebody else's vision.
I mean, you should do a, because we hired an architect for Call Your Mother. You should see their renderings versus what actually showed up. It's a little different.
I just saw it
when I was doing the research for the interview.
She just told me today, like, it was the
because we love the space.
Yeah. So it's amazing.
I was
it's great.
There and I was like, and then I saw the rendering and I was like, whoa, they put a lot of personality.
Andrew did it. Andrew painted the walls.
That's awesome. I love the walls, by the way.
I took one of our construction workers' helmets, opened a can of paint, threw it in the helmet, climbed up there, and I took a sponge brush because I have no effing clue what I'm doing and just started twerking away.
It's awesome.
Yeah, and it turned out pretty good.
So, you know, like as a thing of advice as far as you try to always be able to maintain that.
For
because
sure.
Because it makes such a difference in whether people directly know that, they feel it.
Yeah, and what I
and it's a very personal thing.
Well, in 2019, you can get anything in the world delivered to your couch, right?
Yeah.
And people are only going out for like experiences, and people are only going out for experiences that are authentic. So it's like, how do you stay authentic as you grow?
Just open up a cannabis cafe and just smoke.
I'm with it.
There it is. When we're doing it, business partners.
I'm in.
Sign. There, you want an experience? Yeah. I'll fucking show you an experience. Smoke that. I don't think about that.
Hey, Danny, talking about cannabis, but not so much.
Oh, why not?
No, well, I'm going to talk about the Super Club that you guys are doing. Tell me about that.
Supper Club.
Supper Club. I call it the Super Club.
Super Supper Club. We're going to sell you some super soup.
So it was the idea to do it from the beginning. Yes. Andrew had this vision that we were going to open at nighttime and do something fun. He wanted to
another
showcase.
Of his crazy ideas that you were like, this was crazy, but I'm gonna do it.
The thing with me is like, yes, I say it's crazy first, and then I say like, yeah, sure, I'll figure out later. But then when the time comes, I was like, what in the world?
This is the idea we fought the most about overall.
So much.
The supper club.
The thing is like,
She's like, are you fucking crazy? I'm waking up at 1 a.m. to bake bagels. Right. I'm not baking up.
And so I was that's the reason, right?
I was like, we have to do it. And she's like, we're not fucking doing it. And I was like, all
right,
well.
Right. So I say yes. I say yes before everything started. Like, I never imagined it was going to be so insane. Call your mother.
Right, right.
You guys have lines out the door.
Andrew was baking with me the first couple of times just to keep me company and help us, like, go to the
help you psychologically stable.
It's okay.
Like,
exactly. You're going to make it. You're going to make it. Here, you want some water? Here, I'll towel off your head.
He was putting the tunes and, like, being there.
DJ.
I bake, too.
He baked, too.
So Shira's out there baking.
Sometimes.
She's like, when she would complain about her hair. Hands hurt, and I would tap her out and bake for a little bit, burn some bagels, and then she'd tap back in.
No, but we never imagined it was going to be so busy. So in paper, it looked fine. Like, yeah, we'll be open in the morning. I'll be baking. Then I'll go to sleep for a little bit, go to Timber, and then do this cool, fun dinner at night. It's only 18 people. So I thought it was going to be easy. But it was chaos when we opened. It was bad, like crazy. And he was like, hey, we got to do this. I was like, shut the fuck up. I am not doing this. So we tried, and then I was like, dude, I can't do it. And so
yeah, we did
focused.
Two of them.
We did two.
You did two of the supper clubs already?
Yeah, we didn't totally have our alcohol license at that point.
Bring your own kind
yeah,
of thing.
So we're not going to say how all that went down. But
something happened.
So it sort of made sense to also put it on pause so yes. Danny could catch her breath.
So
and we
push
get our
it, and
license.
Then now we're starting again, and the whole plan was, it was all Andrew's ideas. Like, he wanted to make, like, bring fun to food again. Like, we don't really like going out to restaurants. We love eating, but, like, we don't like the fact that you have to sit down at a table and, you know, feel
so
a little
stuffy.
Awkward and... I don't know. We want it to be fun. So, like, then he has a great taste for food. All the ideas mainly comes from him telling me stuff. And, like, out of 10, like, I pick 2 or 3, but, like, they're amazing. And one thing he says, like, hey, I want to do a pasta night. And I grew up eating pasta. I grew up making pasta with my grandmother and my mom. So, like, that like, called to me, and I was like, yeah, cool. I love it. Let's do it. Then fast food, we like eating burgers, fries, and all that. Mm-hmm. And then the third one that we're doing
but
is...
But like done with dope local ingredients.
Yes, yeah. Everything
of course.
Local. We're making the buns and everything. And the third one, we have our chef, I call your mother's, Joe. And
McPherson.
I'll let Andrew pronounce his last
Joe
name.
Joe McPherson.
Yes.
Shout
I just,
out.
I just call him Chef Joe. You know.
Keep it safe.
Giuseppe sometimes. So anyways, he...
when he's making pasta.
Yeah, on pasta night only.
So he's very talented and has, like, great ideas. And, like, he came out with the idea of making southern food. And that kind of, like, spoke to Andrew about, like, making fried chicken and biscuits and cobbler. What else are we doing?
Chicken fried turkey, peel and eat shrimp, hush puppies, black-eyed peas, cobbler, deviled eggs, all
damn,
sorts of...
southern food, man.
Sweet tea.
Yeah, sweet tea where your teeth, like,
yeah, exactly.
Start to hurt.
But part of the reason for the supper club is, it is true, Danny and I love to eat, and, like, going out and somebody describing, like, how the cow was raised and, like, how the cheese got there, we're just like, get
you
the
can't
F
do
out of
that
my face.
Anymore
yeah.
Since, I mean...
We just want shit to be casual and fun. We
and
want it to be like a
good.
Dinner club. And then above that, Danny is so, so talented. And I don't want her to get pigeonholed as like, oh, she's just doing pizza and bagels, right? Like, this girl can cook her face off. And so the supper club was selfish on one side because, like, I want to eat this dope stuff. But two, like, I just wanted, like, Danny to show off her cooking chops and be like, it's not just pizza and bagels.
Well, I mean, the article
I'm
that
here,
was
mofo.
Was written somewhere was you were saying that. You're like, it feels so good to get back into it and start making this kind of food. So
yeah.
Are you still feeling that way? Or are you still like, or is it like shit, it's just another thing to do?
No, now I feel like more passionate about it. Running your own business is like, you kind of like at some point it's like, oh shit, I just don't want anything else on my plate. And you kind of focus on other stuff and leave your passions to the side a lot of times. And that's what happens to me. And I'm like, I'll just rather don't do what I like.
You know, we women do that a lot. Mm-hmm. That's one thing that, you know, I was talking to a women group the other day and somebody said that, you know. Oh, we had a leadership. I took a leadership workshop and she came and said, you know, we women, we just put our things aside and just do a million things mm-hmm. because we just fix it. We just go forward mm-hmm. and, like, put up fires.
That's why I'm
and
so happy that
important.
Women are stepping into the running of this planet because the men are fucking it all up. And the women, I think, and hopefully... will help make it a little more sustainable.
Well, she was
continue.
Saying we need to basically, you know, go back to what we want.
Right.
Think about what we want and what's that passion and just go for it and not let just life take us, you know, to wherever it takes us and just we solve things because we know how to do that, mm-hmm. you know? Like, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to, like, say, like, okay, no, I'm not going to put out this fire. Like, because you know that you can do it. Good and do it fast and
exactly.
efficient. So I'm like, yeah, I'll just rather fix it myself than waiting for somebody else to do
this
it.
Girl has more moving pieces on her plate than anybody in the world, and I'm a nightmare to work with, and I bitch about everything, and if something's not perfect, the first person I turn to is Danny. Danny, why is this like this? So
yeah,
she's got a lot on her plate, and
Because you guys...
She's pulling it off.
No, well, she is pulling it off. She just, you know, curses me out twice a day.
Well, and but, that's, you know, that's, you know, that's part of it, too. Yeah. You know, it's like there is something about... I always see this as far as the... Women can do this whole multitasking, a lot of different stuff, a lot of different things all at the same time, much better in general than most men can.
Sure.
We're very good at one task, but when it comes to like 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6, then it just all kind of like falls apart. Where women can keep like 5, 10
I'm not even
moving.
That good at one task. I just come up with ideas and she like makes it happen. It's unbelievable. I got the best job in the world.
Too humble.
Yeah.
It's but just, like, yeah, I wouldn't be here where I am today if it wasn't for him, for example.
Yeah. So it's like a dynamic thing. You know, it's like, yeah, it's good that you're really good at what you do. It's very different than what he does really good. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing as far as whether it's a business relationship, a personal relationship, whatever it is. I think the thing is like to 100% respect, mm-hmm, each one for their role of what they do, and then kind of get off together, yeah, in that, you know, that's
and don't
that,
hold grudges.
Yeah, which is easier said
Danny,
than done.
Yeah,
Danny. It's much easier said than done, you know. But it's like for it to work, it's got to be the teams have, yeah, to like the whatever the fullback has to fully respect the court, you know,
sure,
that whole thing.
No, no doubt.
Where it's not not expecting the expectations of the other one to do something else that, right, they're not doing or good at doing, and that's
oh yeah, we go through that a lot.
Oh man, yeah. Whether it's again at home or at, yeah, work for us, it's like there's. It's,
remember, I'm good at this, but I'm not good at that. Yeah. Don't yell at me because
right,
I didn't do
I
it right.
Suck
because
at
I
that.
Won't
so if
do
you
it right.
Cause and inevitably, yeah, you have to do stuff. You, yeah, know that you're, yeah, not. The
I told you I looked up to you guys, so now I'm dating my business partner, just like you guys.
Wait until you have 3 children.
Oh, exactly.
Do you want to 8 stores?
We have a dog, yeah, and that's, yeah, that's been a disaster. In its,
yeah,
own,
well,
so,
just wait. Yeah. You have no idea. And
it's the best.
It's, yeah, the best. It's a. Yeah. It's like all. It's the same thing as a business. There's so much work. There's so much stress. There's so much headache. But at the end of the day, it's yours, mm-hmm, and you can do whatever the fuck you want. And that, to me, is that's worth all of the work and headache and stress and vulnerability that is involved in running a business, is the fact that it's yours and it's not working for the man. Because you know what? You
preach.
Just got to stick it to the,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
And
preach.
That's all, you know, that's,
well, I think
it.
People look at us as the man now, which is a
I
weird
know.
Reverse. Yeah.
Oh, I know. Right. Yeah. What happened?
Yeah, but
we're trying to be good.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I do think so. We're the bosses. Yeah.
Oh, okay. From the customers,
yeah,
as well.
Our staff.
No, not from the customer. I'm talking
our
about
staff.
Right, the staff. Yeah. Yeah.
We're pretty,
yeah,
good, though. We're nice.
Yeah.
We're nice people.
You got to be.
We give gym memberships and shit. We try hard.
Yeah, I saw the tracksuits, man.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Tracksuits.
That's, you know, amazing.
So, I want to close with a little bit.
I want
bit
the wrestling
of a
singlet, though. That's what I want to see.
Nah, working.
I don't know what you're talking about, but
it
sounds
good.
Sexy.
Good thing, you
know. Anyway, so we talk a lot about the similarities, right, of opening your own business and, you know, like the chaos and working together and having a crazy Argentine lady next to you or a crazy gringo next to you or whatever that is. But I read that your dream is still going back to Cordoba and opening a little timber there, and it just stroke me, is that even a word?
Stroked you, yeah.
Stroke me.
That's a good word, stroke you in a singlet.
Because we always talk about going back to South America. Anyway, so our dream is also, you know, eventually going back to nature or whatever it
South
is and
America.
Having a more quiet, simple life. It's funny how we all talk about growing a business and, you know, life gets more and more complicated and we sort of crave for simplicity. And it just, when I read that, I was like, oh, she craves the same thing.
Yeah, go into that a little bit. Like, yeah, that vision, like, has nothing to do with
just the future, just the hopeful future.
Yeah, I mean, when I moved here, the plan was to only come for a year. I told my dad, hey,
that's what we said.
That was why,
exactly,
when we came here.
Yeah, I told him, like,
we're
hey,
gonna save money and go back to Argentina.
Exactly.
That's what he
same
told
thing.
Me.
Same thing.
Yeah.
So
I never made a decision of being here.
Yeah. So
I'm
no,
still like,
neither.
What am I doing?
Well, the worst part, I think,
I wanted to go to Europe. That's what I wanted. I never get married. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So
too.
The bad part is, like, for my family, like, they, especially my dad, because he saw me leaving as a girl, and I said, like, I'll be back next year. And even though he saw I was coming back, he told me, like, hey, be careful, because my
has dad
uncles,
met Andrew yet?
No.
Okay.
No, this is a long time. Oh yeah, sorry, he did.
Very, very memorable meeting.
Yes. No one remembers.
Quite an impact.
So my uncles are immigrants, were immigrants, and they moved to Miami. And then he say, like, we grew up seeing that and talking on the phone and sending letters. And he's like, be careful, because once you leave, you're not going to belong anywhere. And like those words like stayed in my mind forever. I was like, what the hell is he talking about? Like, if I want to go back, I'll go back. If I want to stay here, stay here. But I'm in like this middle ground that when I'm here, I want to be there. And when I'm there, I'm like, I want to be there. So yeah. It's like,
I know how you feel. You know, it's interesting.
You'll never resolve that.
Well, yes and no. Like, I felt that way for like 10 years. And then one day I was like, damn, my life is here and I love it. Like, I think it got to a point in which I embrace it. But it took like also having 3 kids and a lot of rooting, you know, just like building my house and having a business. And then suddenly I was like, okay, this is where I'm from. I'm from Washington, D.C. now. I've spent 20 years here and 20 years in Argentina.
I don't even say that.
No. But I mean, right now, it's not that I'm saying I'm from Washington, D.C. I didn't grow up here, but half of my life has been here.
I always tell Violeta, like, don't become too American. Please never become too American.
I still want to go back to South America. I haven't lost my soul in the cruel capitalist world, but I think I achieve a place in which I feel more connected with here, and I think that's a good thing. I mean, I don't know, like, time heals, I guess, who knows,
or makes you forget.
Well, if you guys want to open like a combo gelato pizza bagel shop in Argentina, let's do that.
I'm Jewish, we have the gelato,
we can do the whole
pizza
thing.
I'm saying for real,
let's do it. I just gotta learn Spanish. It's like,
like I told you the other day, just make sure at home you speak Spanish.
I have
or at
no
least
patience.
Cuss them out in Spanish.
Yeah, that already happens.
Yeah,
I'm picking up on that.
Just
something.
At least start with the bad words. Where is where it always starts. So,
guys, thank you so much. It's
been
so good
talking to you. Congratulations on like everything that you guys are doing. Supper Club's coming.
These guys are crushing it. When is your supper club?
Pause. Now you can get Call Your Mother Bagels at Dolce's, starting very soon.
Very soon.
You can get Dolce's at Timber. So, you know, it's
working
all love in here, for sure.
100%.
And Supper Club starts March 4th. Tickets are already sold out for March.
Yeah. Okay,
but more tickets are going on sale the week of March 4th for April. So,
and go by Call Your Mother and try those bagels.
Are fucking rocking it, and congratulations, and you're the coolest people, and you deserve it all.
That's how I feel about y'all, right back at y'all.
Let's all, after the show goes down, let's plan the escape from all of this mayhem.
See you in Cordoba.
Yeah, see you
Argentina. Fire up the jet. Let's go.
Exactly.
Bye-bye.
See you guys. Thank
you later, guys.
See you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO. On Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.